Lecture 11, Medical Use of Stem Cells. Santa's Gift Program to Me, Seminar, How I Train My Genie Stem Cells. Medical Use of Stem Cells. Our points here are: surgeons use stem cells to implant them in bodies and organs needing revitalization. Stem cells may be physically transported from any cell part in the body. Surgeons force stem cells into place, a traumatic experience. Research is being done on a less traumatic approach. Surgeons force stem cells into place, and they implant them in the body, needing to be revitalized. When you go on encyclopedia on the internet, you find all sorts of illustrations of where science is using stem cells to implant them into human organs to revitalize the human organs and make them come alive. Now, you'd think that there'd be a lot more hurrah and hallelujah about it, that there'd be a lot more talk about it. But, interestingly, there is not. Or, I'm just not on the pipeline that knows all about it. Because we found out about it sort of surreptitiously ourselves not too long ago. And it's quite something to realize that the brain, according to science, releases 10,000 brand new undifferentiated stem cells every day. Now, are they in mass, like whoosh, or are they just dribbling out? And if they're dribbling out, science now also tells us that there are stem cells throughout the body. Throughout the body, organs, every cell virtually is manufacturing stem cells and pumping them into the body, into the system. Now, this is magic. As far as we're concerned, it's magic as far as we are thinking about it, and yet we don't take advantage of it. We can take advantage of it. We can take advantage of it to know scientists are doing it and surgeons are doing it. I told you the story of the surgeon in China who had a whole bunch of stem cells where they have less restrictions over there. And they pumped them into the brain of this child who was rather unable to do anything. And he was able to open an eye. You know? And you and I think, gee, that's not such a big deal. Well, his parents lived in London and they could afford to pop back and forth. So they flew over there and they took him a second time. And a second time when they took him, he not only opened his eyes, but he started moving his fingers. Now, that gave the parents great hope and great expectations. And, of course, that's what it's going to be. And they're going to continue doing that. Now, theoretically, they should not have to do that. Theoretically, once they put a stem cell into place, it should revitalize the brain and the mechanism that operates the entire body, the hypothalamus region down here, which operate the entire body and all the mechanisms in the body. But because, in my estimation, because they are traumatically forcing the stem cells into the brain in a large number, then the brain is just overwhelmed with this new package, with this new program, and it doesn't know how to do it. Now, the child, this particular child, has the limitation of being a vegetable. He's not dead, he's not a true vegetable, but he is unable to open his eyes and move his fingers and move his hands and do anything else. But they are causing that to happen, that he can do that. Now, I would imagine If the scientists or if the surgeons knew more about the body and how the body functioned, and they say they do, what causes the body to function in various areas? Now, what does the liver do? What does the heart do? What do all the enzymes and proteins and all the chromosomes and all these other things do in the body? Now, they're doing research to find out how certain chromosomes in the body can be negative to the proper development of the body, and they're working on understanding it more and changing that chain reaction. And in changing that chain reaction, they might change many things. However, I believe if they could encourage a stem cell to touch that area of the chromosome, it could very well put it into a more positive, right form and completely heal the entire body. Because our body, it just needs one little kink to put it out of order. One little glitch that puts it out of order. And you, every day of your life, are forcing glitches into your body. And I, every time you get uptight, we mentioned this before, every time you get uptight, you turn off your juices. You turn off all of the activities that go on in your body to form and conduct itself in a harmonious way. Now, why do we persist in doing this when we know better? Now, what's the first thing that medical doctors try to do with their patient? They try to get them to be calm. They give them a sedative. You heard of a sedative? They give them a sedative to calm down. Now, it's not a bad thing, but what it does, it makes them no longer responsive to the response that they had to something that made them upset. They were no longer caring about it. Sedative is like a relaxation pill. People use that by the billions around the world because they want to let go of certain problems that are affecting them and putting their body out of balance. The stem cells are probably the best sedative that we could ever have if we would let them work. Now, this is my projection based upon a lot of study and a lot of understanding. My projection is that since the stem cells are so beautiful and do such a magnificent job and are just waiting to be directed, should we have, so to speak, an affirmation or a statement of fact? Drink water. It is good for your body. It helps to let your body function. Okay. Say to these invisible stem cells inside you, they're there. Science tells us they're there. Not a matter that we're talking, you know, mystical, magical things. We're talking a very, very definite thing. The cells are there. So we say, stem cells, flow over my body like a peaceful, quiet blanket. Stem cells, fill every organ, action, and function of my body. Drop one little stem cell into each little organ, action, function of my body, and let it all return to its what? Its original purity and integrity. You see, that's what we have to work with. The original purity and integrity is always there. It just needs to be stimulated into action. We stimulate other things into action, like tension. We stimulate unhappiness. We stimulate all sorts of nervousness in our body, and we want to stimulate our original purity and integrity. And when we stimulate our original purity and integrity, what happens in our bodies? Our bodies are entirely different. Our bodies take on an entirely different picture. Now, psychiatrists and psychologists and metaphysicians, religious teachers, teachers of meditation, teachers of relaxation, hypnotists, hypnotherapists, all these people are trying to do the same thing. They're trying to make people relax. Make you relax, you know. Go to sleep, you know. Well, your intention. Your intention when they put you to sleep. And I might say this, and I don't want to say this because it's not very happy, but all these relaxation pills put us into a tense relaxation. They do not harmoniously balance us. And that's why we have to keep taking them again and again and again, because they're just a temporary thing. Our stem cells, on the other hand, are not temporary. Our stem cells are very much there to sort of revitalize every organ, action, function of our body to its original purity and integrity. And this is what we want to do. Now, if I say, take your pill, you'll feel a lot happier. Take your pill, you'll relax. Take your pill, do this. What do you do? You remember Ilsa. Ilsa was one of our test cases. Ilsa didn't like to take her pills. And when she took her pills, she was a smooth superwoman. When she didn't take her pills, every little thing on the face of the earth bugged her until she drove us all mad. And so we told her, the doctor tells you, take the pills, you take the pills, and you're nice to live with. You don't take the pills, we don't want you here. I mean, we don't have to put up with that sort of tension. Now, we could have mentally and spiritually healed her. We could have done that, but no one made that suggestion. And we were supposed to be a healing university. Isn't that interesting? All we thought was, how do we get rid of that tension that she is putting into our circle there? And she is a wonderful lady. A wonderful lady. But her purpose with us was to drive us mad, if we want to allow it to happen. Now, you're doing that right now with every organ, action, function of your body. Every day you're driving yourself mad. You want to be different. You want to be different. You want to be different. You want to be slimmer, you want to be fatter, you want to be shorter, you want to be taller, you want to be smarter, you want to be dumber, you want to be whatever. And I say all these things that you think are, you don't think, but you do. You do. Every time you say, I am too heavy, I am too thin, I am, my hair color is wrong, or this or that. Every time you say anything negative about your body, you are putting yourself right out of line with perfect harmony, with your original purity and integrity. And see, we want to put ourselves in harmony with our original purity and integrity. And the only way we can do that is when we ourselves are balanced. Now, as a psychiatrist will tell you, and I mean they really know, that the people who are in the mental institutions shouldn't be there. But the rest of the population should. And I find that not only humorous, but I find that sad. And it's sad from the point of view that we let all of you get along well in society because you are manipulated by society and you allow society to push you around. You allow society to tell you what clothes to wear, what things to say, how to act, how to drive, how to live, you know? I told you the story last time there was a report by a safety committee, and they found that when people were left alone to their own devices, they drove harmoniously. But when they put stop signs, when they put squiggles on the road saying the road is twisty-turny, when they did all these things, there were more accidents because of those signs. Because people had an inner rebellion against being told what to do. I mean, even though that was necessary, according to the scientists, according to the city, the state, and the county who run these roads, they did research that was necessary to slow people down because they're killing themselves. And yet, if instead of doing that, they would have a meditator out there and have the meditator say, everyone drives harmoniously, everyone drives comfortably, everyone drives according to the road, everyone drives, we have the most beautiful drivers in the world. This is Switzerland. Switzerland has the best drivers in the world. This is the United States. It is the best drivers in the world. Every driver in America drives smoothly and coolly and wonderfully. We have billions and billions and billions and zillions of miles that our drivers are driving without accident. A few are driving with accidents, but most are not. Accidents are the exception. They are not the rule. You understand that? Okay. But we think they're the rule because they get attention. Now, we give attention to all the negativities and we empower them to be and to be more and to escalate, to exacerbate, to grow and grow and grow. How foolishly, you know, how foolishly we do that. We don't need to or want to do that, but we do. Now, we go to the drugstore and we buy pills. Oh, what amuses me so much, in a sad way, but amuses me so much, and what pisses me off so much too, because of what comes on my computer, everybody wants to help a man have an erection so that women can have more wonderful sex. And I'm on my computer, my incoming mail used to be one or two pieces of email from people I wanted to hear from, and the rest were selling Viagra. What is that?
Viagra.
Viagra. See, even you know all about that. And what a stupid, stupid thing. Now, remember, Gertrude, remember back in our days, remember back in the days before all this stuff, people had wonderful sex. People had wonderful relationships. People had good sex because they loved each other. Not because they were enforcing this by creating this big stick that men had and to have a relationship. What a silly thing. What an absolute... I mean, it takes away totally from what the purpose of it is. The purpose of it, theoretically, is supposed to be romantic. It's supposed to be something so cozy and so togetherness, something that is gentle, something that is so beautiful. Well, now, part of the beauty of it was the foreplay and the afterplay and all those things. But what do? They make a commercial operation out of it. And of course, they tried to do this years ago. What did they call it? Aphrodisiacs. Remember? Remember Salome? Don't you remember Salome? Don't you remember all of these women who were the femme fatales, and they had the little portion in a little bottle, and it made men fall in love with them or women fall in love with men and what have you. I mean, this is always the universal trademark of manipulation. And how silly. How silly. How wonderful when two people care about each other and find each other very attractive to each other, and they both harmonize with each other and they also respond to each other. How lovely. But when you just do this, the whole world is just a big whorehouse, that's all. I mean, my goodness, sir, what do you talk about? Yes, but it's true. You see, this is what happens. It's a phase that'll pass. Because it is not really anything that makes people happy. It's just like getting drunk. It doesn't make you happy. Maybe on the way to getting drunk, you forget your problems, and then you're cuckoo, and then you come back, and you got a headache, and you wish you hadn't done it, and then you go back and do it again. But there are people, and would you like to hear the word? The majority of the people in the world who ever tasted alcohol are not interested in it. It's just a small minority who drink up a storm. And they are all trying to forget stuff. And they don't forget anything, because as soon as they come back to their senses, the world is facing them again. And you see, with these stem cells, they're right inside of us. We've had them all the time. They've always been there. And we can always say to them, stem cell, invigorate my body. Let me be powerful and fantastic and glorious, because that's who I believe I am. Let me, you know, your chest goes out, your chin goes up. Let me be fantastic, powerful, and glorious as I walk around my world. Let me be. And your stem cells just say, oh, I know what he wants. I know what she wants. She wants to be fantastic. She wants to be glorious. And that's what the stem cells do. You give them the message that you want to be a glorious being. You understand? Now, do you really want to be a glorious being? And the answer is no. You say, oh, come on now. No. If you wanted to be a glorious being, you'd act like that. What kind of an actor do you want to be? You want to be a Shakespearean actor? You want to be the actor of the king or the queen playing the best roles in the play, so to speak? Or do you want to be the robber, the battler, the crook, the bad guys? You know, what do you want to do? You want to be chased by the law, or you want to be the law chasing? Both are equal. Both are equal. Or do you want to be the meditator? Do you want to be the peaceful one? Do you want to go to your home and sit in your chair and say to yourself, I am God. God, I am. I am the creator of my world. I live in a beautiful world. I am surrounded by beautiful beings and beautiful circumstances. And then I surround my son with the pure white light of love. Wherever he goes, he does things in peace and harmony, and he is dearly beloved by everyone, and he loves everyone. He has a charmed life. He is charismatic. He is fantastic. That's my creation. My son, you know. My daughter, super duper. You know, my daughter is built like a brick truck, you know, and she's just fantastic. But she has a beautiful body. But she's not trying to use it. It's just her nature. Her nature to be beautiful. And everyone respects her as being beautiful, and they would never damage that beauty in any way. You know, they would never damage. They never feel that they have to push that person around, because that person is so pure, so beautiful. Where does that start? That starts with you. Mama, Daddy, with you sitting in your chair at home saying, I am surrounded by the most beautiful family in the world, but I am beautiful too. I am God. You see, and then you're telling the stem cells in you to do in you their perfect work. And then you're telling the stem cells in you to do their perfect work with your family. Now, how do they do their perfect work with your family? I'm sorry?
Perfect thoughts.
Yeah, but how do they do their perfect work with your family? They have in you the vision of your family perfect. You cannot look out of your eyes and see anything but the purity that you are within. Is that clear? Mm-hmm. You cannot look outside and see misery if you are balanced and harmonious, you know. You cannot. You cannot look at the world and think the world is a terrible place if you are a wonderful place. But see, this is the difference between the surgeons putting stem cells into place. It works. It works. It can do beautiful things. And I will go into detail on that a little later. But it can go and do beautiful things. But what does the most beautiful thing is our own mind, our own thinking power. When you sit down and do the few little things I ask you to do, I'm not asking you to do it because I wish it, I hope and I'd like it to work, but I know it works. I know it works. When I told Heinz, I said, Heinz, you just say, I'm whole and perfect. I like me, I'm divine order, I'm peace. I said, Heinz, say it. And when he started saying it, his life, he did before, but he didn't stay with it. But when he started saying it now, it blew his mind. It just blew his mind. And he went into a coma, remember? They put him into a coma. But he went into this coma for a couple days. And when he came out, all of his tension, all of his anxiety, all of his worry about But his body, if he lives, good. If he dies, good. He wasn't caring anymore. Not that he wasn't caring. He was not worrying. He was just at peace. And what happens when you are at peace? When you are peace, what happens? Healing takes place. What is healing? Anybody? Returning to our original purity and integrity. Healing is not something that is changing anything. It's just returning to your original purity and integrity. Now, if I say, and I growl at you, and I say, oh, you guys are so wonderful, I love you, I love you, I love you. Now, did I change anything? I was just putting on a show. I was just showing you anger and showing you love, and either is all right, but which one did you like? You like the love, you like the peace, you like the happiness. And you cannot have happiness from me if there's no happiness in you, because you wouldn't recognize it. You wouldn't recognize that I was being nice if you didn't have any niceness in you. So if you see me being nice, just pat yourself on the back and say, that's me. He is my reflection. Remember how Annie Mame tried to play the role of a Southern Belle? And she fell flat on her face because she didn't believe it. She didn't believe it. She liked the guy. Why did she like the guy? He was a reflection of everything good in her. He saw her as a beautiful woman. He saw her as a gorgeous woman. He saw her as talented, as knowledgeable. He saw her as his equal. He saw her as someone he was proud to take home to mama. And his mama was not easy to please. But his mama had to change her mind. She had to change her mind when this woman turned out to be a magical miracle woman who did things that no other woman in her whole world had ever done before. And she comes out smelling like a rose. A little battered, but smelling like a rose. And you see, she didn't pretend to make it up to anybody. She just was having fun. And what? Where was the fox, you know? In her coat there, in her bosom. And where was all these things? And the gun goes off. You know? And what did the horse do? The horse was a terror, was one that's supposed to be a killer. She didn't know that. He's a little skittish, he was hard to get on. But once she got on, she couldn't get off because her garment hooked onto the horse and she couldn't get off. But you see, this is the thing. When we know all the facts, we sort of laugh at it. But not knowing the facts, we say, how does she do it? How does she stay on over the loop? And she doesn't know anything about it. How does she do it? Well, you know how she does it? She's a cool cat. She's a cool girl. Nothing frightens her. Oh, she probably feels just, what's going to be next? How am I going to handle this? Or, you know, but she doesn't worry. She flows with it. Now you, when you can get rid of all your burden of unhappiness and anxiety over whatever things you have, and just sort of flow with the magic of life. When I tell you to sing, sing. When I tell you to act, act. When I tell you to do anything, just do it. Because it's for you that this is being done. I don't need to have you do that. I can certainly listen to better music than you'll ever sing, you know. But can you ever listen to better music than you'll ever sing, you know? So when I ask you, you know I've got to have a lot of guts. And I do. And I'm glad to have you do it. But flow with the game, with the program, with the things that I suggest for you to do. And when you do that, man, do you have beautiful things happening. Now, Ingeborg was an old stick in the mud a couple times. And she didn't want to play. She didn't want to do this. She didn't want to do that. And I said, but Ingeborg, I want you to. So then she did. And what did she do? She sounds like a professor, you know, coming out with all this wisdom and all this knowledge and all this stuff. She sounded like a professor. Almost as good as Sylvia. But you sound like a professor, you know? And it's wonderful. Now, how do you handle that, Ingvar? Did that come because of me? Was that a reflection of me? Or was that the reflection of you?
Reflection of myself.
See? A reflection of herself. And that's good. Now, Ingvar, always do that. Let go. And let the divine in you sparkle out. But you see, this is what happens when you let your stem cells go to work. Because Ingvar could just say, okay, stem cells, take over, take over. I haven't the slightest idea what's going to come next. Like Annie Mame, she had the slightest idea what's going to come next. But she just rolled with the punches and came out the winner. Now, the lady who was not very nice to her, what happened to her? Down. They weren't mean to her. They should have. They weren't mean to her. Why do I say they should have? Because I'm showing the human attitude. But the divine attitude says, hey, that's all right. Play your games. I'm equal to any game around. Give me the toughest game you can give me, and I love to play it. I don't get excited over the simple games of chess. I get excited over the tough games of chess. I don't get excited over the simple little problems of life, which say to me, X plus Y equals Z plus minus Q and stuff like that. But when you get into the quadrants and you get into all sorts of spatial mathematics and stuff like that, and you say, man, how do you ever come up with the answer? And then you say to yourself, if an autistic child can tune into their divine self, and they don't even know what they're doing, if they can tune into their divine self and know the answers to these tremendous mathematical problems, certainly I, knowing my divine self, and knowing that I'm alert, aware, awake of everything that's going on, can do it too, right? 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 Mm-hmm. Yes. It is the way it works. Now, this is what I want you to be aware of. You know science is doing these things, and you know the stem cells do wonderful things whenever they're properly placed. But you might ask yourself, why is it that all the stem cells don't function as perfectly as they could?
Because we get in the way.
Hmm?
We get in the way.
We get in the way? How?
With our thoughts and attitudes.
Well, right now I'm talking about the scientists.
Oh.
Yeah. And so, now, and the scientists getting in the way, okay? Now, what do the scientists do that make the stem cells less effective? They force them into place. They, put them in a hypodermic needle, boom. Now, if these silly scientists can count 10,000 stem cells, and that's on a daily basis, so they got to count it in one day, and maybe even then they aren't quite getting all of them, but just 10,000, that's a good start. If they can count 10,000 stem cells and not kill them in the process, which I would like to think they don't do, but count 10,000 stem cells, could they introduce one stem cell into the liver? How would you introduce one stem cell into the liver? It's like delivering a baby. You want to gently move it into its new world. And so you're putting this stem cell from the brain into the liver. And you've got the liver open. Or maybe you're putting it with a special syringe or something into the liver. Okay. Shot, swing, right down into it. Okay. What's going to happen? Do you think that they have the capacity to send just one stem cell there?
Yep.
Mm-hmm. They do. But why? They feel that if one is good, a dozen are better. But I say to you, each stem cell is like a given thought. And one thought does its magical work. Two thoughts bring confusion. Three thoughts accomplish nothing. Four thoughts make it is nothing. You know, they just fight each other all the way. Now you say, well, stem cells fight each other? Yes, because they all are sent to do a job that one of them should be doing. And the one stem cell should be going into the liver, for instance, and revitalizing the liver. If it doesn't, what does the one stem cell, if one stem cell is joined by a bunch of others, what does the one stem cell first do? It destroys the other stem cells. Science knows this. Scientists know this. How many of you are familiar with the sperm? Ellen, listen. How many of you are familiar with the sperm and the egg? The egg is an egg, okay? And the egg has a membrane around it. And the sperm has to fight to try to get in there. If you've ever seen the little movie that's on that. And the sperm is trying to fight. Not only that, there are thousands of sperms trying to get in there. And only one can get there. The rest of them all try to get in there, and only one can make it in there, unless you have twins, you know. But even that is not always that way. But basically, one gets in. Now, the instant one breaks the membrane and gets inside, and pop, then the egg is sealed. Instantly sealed. Isn't that amazing? It's instantly sealed, so not one other sperm can get in there. Because if any other sperm did get in there, which it couldn't, it would have to be destroyed. Because it would destroy the equilibrium of the purpose of the egg and the sperm cell. The sperm cell brings with it its own magic. And the egg brings with it its own magic. And together they make up the human body. Together they make up this being. This housing that houses that spiritual being. And if... see... if you ever saw, do we get a copy of that film sometime of the sperm cell and the egg coming together? It's a sort of a little comedy, but it's charming. And one sperm cell.
Look who's talking.
Look who's talking. Yeah, yeah. It's about the baby being born. We have that, don't we? Yeah. Well, in there. The one sperm cell is the kid who's going to be born. And he's saying to his buddies, come on, guys, it's over here. No, it's over there. Let's go over here. Now, come on. And they're talking to each other about where the egg is, and they're going to... Now, let's all go together and let's do it. You know, he didn't realize it was going to be a one-one effort, but he was making a team out of it because that's the way he was. And so one guy got in. It was him. And so he became the baby. And it's just very charming, but it's true. They made a joke out of it. They made it very humorous, but it's true. They know, too, that only one sperm can get in. Now, I imagine when eggs are aborted, that it's probably because more than one sperm tried to get into it or something. But then we have this other point now of a woman has so many eggs. Why is it they're not all fertilized? Why is it that just one is fertilized? Can you imagine a woman having 100 fertilized eggs inside of her? My goodness sakes, would that be a new picture, you know? Oh, my, oh, my, oh, my. And most of women aren't that fat to encompass it, but that's another story. We deal here with the veracity of one sperm, one egg, with one stem cell. Now, one stem cell introduced into the heart or the brain. You say it comes out of the brain. Why is it introduced? Because it's introduced to do a job. Now, where does it get the knowledge that it's supposed to go to work inside of that liver and revitalize it? Because the person who puts it in there, the scientists, the medical doctors, the surgeons who put it in, they put it in there for that purpose. Now you say, well, how does the stem cell understand that? The same way the stem cell understands you telling it what to do. And you wouldn't have to go to a surgeon or anything else like that to accomplish it. You understand? You can accomplish it just with your thought, with your mind, with your words. And this is the magic of it all. And this is the magic of who you are. You might be, you've seen the movie Dumbo. Dumbo, this elephant with the great big ears who flies all over the place with his ears. A charming thing. And you're a Dumbo. Because Dumbo knows he can do it, but he had to get drunk to do it. You know? You know you can do it, but you have to get drunk to do it. Yeah. Why do you think the whirling dervishes are whirling? They're getting drunk. They're getting hyperventilated. They're getting hyper, so that they can speak their word. And they're whirling and they're spinning. And who are the whirling dervishes? Anybody? Who are they? What culture are they?
They're Sufis.
Sufis, that's right. What?
Russia.
Hmm?
She said Russian.
Russian.
Yeah.
Most Sufis come from everywhere. That's true. And they do seem to come from the Ukraine more than anything else.
Yes.
Yeah. The whirling dervish. But
in their dances.
Hmm?
In their dances, they have traditional dances.
Dancing. Yes, dancing. I don't know, maybe I should put my headphones on here, but then you wouldn't hear me. Okay, now, please speak up a little bit, and clearly, I'd like to participate with the good ideas you're offering. So now, help me. Now, yes, the whirling dervish are in Ukraine, they are in dancers, they are from Portugal and Spain. The whirling dervishes are very popular there because of what? Who populated Portugal and Spain in the early years?
The Muslims.
The Muslims, yeah. Yes, it was Mohammed and his crew, you know. It was the Muslims. And they were there and they were very popular. And they were not only the whirling dervishes, they were the secret society dervishes. They had knowledge of many things. Why do you think the alchemists have the ability to do things that they do and they don't get a lot of publicity? Because they don't do it in public. They do it for their own amusement. They know these secrets and they use them, but that's just like walking on water, you know, big deal. Walking on fire, big deal. Huh? These are things that are quite common and quite easily done. But the thing is, once you've done it, Katie Fink, you remember our friend Katie Fink in Germany? In Munich? Munich. What did she do? She went to walk on fire, and then she went to walk on fire again, and then she went to walk on fire four times. Four different times she went to walk on fire. And, oh, Herb, that's so great. Oh, Herb, that's so... And then each time she did it, there was less, oh, Herb. And it was, yeah. And then I said, all right, now, it shows you that you can be master of heat, of your feet, and of many other things, and you're the master through your thought. And what is it that made you master? Thinking about it or not thinking about it? Exactly. Not thinking about it makes you the master because you are now thinking about something else. Okay, now, what are you going to think about as far as these stem cells are concerned? I mean, we've learned now that they exist and they are available to us to use in any way we want to. And we can put them to work on our benefit if we want to. Now, do you want to? And you say, oh, yes. Well, it's just like you want to walk on fire. Yeah, sure you do. You walk on fire only when you're hypnotized. You're hypnotized mentally into thinking something else. What is it?
I'm walking on cool, wet moss.
I'm walking on cool, wet moss. Isn't it nice to have somebody to point to and say these things? I'm walking on cool, wet moss.
She's like a carrot.
Yeah, well, you're hypnotizing yourself. Well, not that part. You're hypnotizing yourself to walk on that cool, wet moss and to walk on that fire. And that fire can roast a chicken. It can burn things. And yet, you have your clothes maybe just up a little bit so you don't get your pants dirty, you know. Amazing, isn't it? Truly amazing. Now, I haven't seen anyone having them lay down on the fire yet. Wouldn't that be interesting? I mean, that would really take something. Now, does anyone in your ken, in your awareness, lay down on the fire? In any culture? In Central America and in the islands, in the West Indies. What are they called? The people enter the state of being a zombie. What is a zombie but a hypnotized being? And they're so hypnotized, they can do anything. And then what do? They put spears through themselves. And they put, you know, over in India, they do all these things. What a bunch of interesting things they're doing, right? Now, is it something you want to do? No, you know, I don't want to hurt this beautiful body of mine. And they don't hurt their body. They take the spear out, no blood, no hole, no nothing. They lay on a bed of nails. I'm saying these illustrations to you, and there's thousands more. But I'm saying just these ones right on the top because you're aware of them, and you can admit to them. And they happen. You're not hypnotized. Maybe you are. Maybe you're hypnotized. Well, you see that. What does David Copperfield do? He hypnotized the whole audience to think that a choo-choo train is on stage. Or that something is missing, you know. And he does marvelous things. What a powerful consciousness he must have. And now, here he has this powerful consciousness to play tricks. And do real things too. Now, you would think that he would do real things. But to do real things doesn't pay as much money as to do the others, to play games, to fool people. What is a hypnotherapist? One who works with people, teaching them how to use positive affirmations for their benefit. Right? But oftentimes it slips over to the other side, where the hypnotherapist gets you hypnotized, so that you no longer are making decisions consciously yourself, but you're making the decisions out of their inspiration, out of their telling you that you're doing it. And that way, it's not too beneficial to you. That's the only thing I oppose in it, because I always want you to be rational. Have you ever heard of Jesus the Christ being hypnotized while he was doing something? Being unconscious, being in a trance while he was doing it. Was Jesus ever in a trance? You know, not that I know. Maybe he was all the time. You know, was any of our popes ever in a trance? You know, who knows? How about Billy Graham? Did he ever get in a trance? Quite often. Billy Graham gets up there and his charismatic way, and he gets the whole crowd, yes, Jesus loves me, yes, I'm a sinner, yes, you know, and he gets people going on these things, and he's in a trance. Now, a trance means he's not in his own conscious awareness. He's living in some sort of a internal state, which may be good, may not be good. And I'm not knocking the guy, because he certainly has turned a lot of people into people believing what he wanted to teach them. And good for him. Good for him. Now, what do you want to believe? What do you want to know for yourself? How do you want to live your life? What do you expect out of your world? Where do you want to go? Do you want to live your life in such a manner that you're controlled and manipulated by the world around you? Which you are doing now. You turn on the radio and it says there's a war and there's in some country, and you say, Herb, there's a war in some country. Why do you tell me something? That's a lie. That's what the radio told you. Now, if I go to that radio announcer and I say to that radio announcer, "Where did you hear that? Were you there?" No, he wasn't there. "I heard it over the radio." "Oh, you heard it over the radio yourself. And where did you hear it from?" Did you ever remember the story about Orson Welles? Orson Welles had a play on the radio, and it was the last days of the United States. And in it, the Martians or somebody came down. It's been a long time since it was, but it's quite a story. People ran out of the cities. They drove in their cars, went to the countryside to get away from the city, and the whole United States was scared silly because this guy told this story so beautifully. He was a master storyteller. He's almost as good as John Dainty, you know. Master storyteller, just super. But the federal government got after him a little. They said, "You can't do that. You're scaring the jabbers out of our nation here." And perhaps in some places in Europe where they heard it too, because the radio went all over the place. That was back in the 30s. Fantastic story. We must not look at it. But it is a story, and it is a movie, and it is rather remarkable. But it shows what one man's story can do. Now, was it true? Absolutely not. Was it something that he visualized and that he imagined? He put his emotions into it. He put all of his creativity into it, and people believed him? My golly, how fantastic. Okay. If our bodies can become so filled with energy over nothing, over an illusion like the theater. Oh, here's another one, really good one. You go to the 3D theater and you put on these 3D glasses, a piece of cardboard with a piece of plastic on it, and it makes you think that they're coming right into your face. Really. Ellen and I were at Max's Theater down in Sydney, Australia, and we were watching these various shows. And we were watching these guys on skateboards, not skateboards, but snowboards, up in the sky. They jumped out of the airplane, and then they skated on the skateboard through the sky with these snowboards, you know. And then they pulled their parachute to let them down nicely. But they had photographs of them being taken, you know, like the front of their boards and from other ones, and then zoom right to you, and it just made you feel like you were right there. And here you are sitting in this theater with everybody, you know, and then there's a few people who took their glasses off and they sat there and looked around and thought, "Boy, you guys are silly. You're sure letting yourself get put on." But that's the way it is. That's the way it is. Now, these illustrations are only to point to you how our mind manipulates us and how we can believe something that is absolutely, categorically not true. That is not so. But we believe it, and then we act like it. What did we do with those glasses? We backed up as though that was going to help something. It's fantastic. Our new screen that we have, this high definition television, this screen is so fantastic. It's so clear and so sharp. But you guys haven't seen everything yet. You've only seen normal stuff. But Meet Joe Black was good on one of the high density one. And it showed, you know, you just felt alive. It was this fireworks and everything that was going on. It was just magnificent. It was a well done film for that purpose. Now, when we see the Blu-ray device and see how it is, it should be even more exciting. And Sylvia and Daniel and me, we played golf. And we played, Sylvia, I was Tiger Woods one time, you were some woman, weren't you? Yeah, and so Sylvia was this woman. And this woman was a top golfer. And with Sylvia in her head, she made a few mistakes. And me, I had Leonard, and he was a top golfer too. And he got in the water three times in one hole. I mean, you know, my goodness sakes, he'd never done that in his life. He doesn't even know what water is, you know, because he is so accomplished. Now, but I was him. I was playing from his body. His body held the club that I was using, and his body was thinking the thoughts that I was generating. And I wasn't a compliment to him, but more so than he knew, perhaps. And we play these games. We play these games, and how easy it is for us to accept that we can do that and use this being. And Tiger Woods looked just like Tiger Woods.
Oh, yeah.
He was just so beautiful. My man, Leonard, was a little bit sticky, but Tiger Woods, it was his game. And so they made him absolutely perfect. And he was magnificent. Magnificent. But you see, this is the game that we're all playing. This is the game that we're all getting into. Now, what we want to do is to make our game pay. Make our game be beneficial to us. Now, research is being done on a less traumatic way of putting the stem cells into the brain. And when we come back from our pause, we'll talk about how that can be done and how we can be even more effective with the utilization of stem cells to accomplish any goal we have in our heart. So, enjoy your pause, and you all come back now. I love you.